Welcome to Carmen Madrid's podcast. Are you preparing for the Delhi B2 or C1 exam? This podcast is made just for you. Carmen Madrid is an accredited examiner from the Instituto Cervantes and your new tutor for this exam. Each episode features a conversation between two speakers generated using advanced AI technology. These conversations are about a previous episode of a Spanish podcast on the Delhi B2 and C1 exams. But that's not all. We offer a range of services to support your learning journey. One-on-one and group Spanish classes, books for Delhi preparation to help you study effectively, exclusive access to the News Club and Reading Club, plus our advanced grammar workshop to deepen your understanding of Spanish. You can find everything at DelhiExam.com. Join us in taking your Spanish to the next level. I'll leave you with my AI friends. Enjoy.
If you're trying to really nail down the toughest parts of language exams, you're definitely in the right place. Today, we are taking a proper deep dive into the written part of the Spanish DELE B2 exam. Specifically, Tarea Uno, that mandatory formal letter. And our goal today is pretty straightforward. We want to give you the exact blueprint, you know, the formulas, the word counts, the formatting rules the examiners are looking for. Because this is the bit, isn't it, that often trips up people who are otherwise pretty fluent. It seems less about just knowing Spanish words and more about, well, protocol.
But that's exactly it. That's where it gets tricky. This is fundamentally, it's a test of your Spanish cultural literacy too, not just your language skills. The way formal letters work in the Spanish speaking world, the structure, the protocol, it's often quite rigid and, well, different from how you might do it in English, for example. So nailing that specific formato, that format, it's absolutely key if you want to pass this section.
Okay, right. So let's start by unpacking that. Let's look at the big shift between the B1 level and the B2 level. If you're someone moving up from B1, what's the first thing you need to kind of forget about the letter task?
You need to forget about being comfortable, basically. The B1 letter, it's always informal, always personal. The task usually kicks off because you get an email, right? Typically from a Spanish friend. And your job is just to reply. It's pretty conversational. You're giving advice, maybe sharing some news. You use familiar greetings, you know, like, hola, un saludo. Simple stuff, really.
Okay, that sounds pretty manageable, yeah. But then B2 hits, and suddenly you're dealing with bureaucracy, institutions. So what's the fundamental change in how the task even starts?
Oh, it's a huge change. Drastic, really. First off, the B2 letter is strictly formal. And here's the big surprise. You don't get an email or a text to reply to. Now, the task actually begins with you having to listen to an audition. That's an audio task. And they play it exactly twice. You need to be really on the ball with note-taking during those two listens, because the information you pick up from that audio, it has to be worked into the letter you write.
Wait, hang on. So I'm writing a formal letter, maybe to a city council director or someone, based on notes I scribbled down from listening to. What, like a radio clip or an announcement?
Exactly. Maybe a news report, a short lecture snippet, something like that.
Wow. Okay, that completely changes the game. It means your immediate focus isn't even on perfect grammar at that point. It's on catching the key info from the audio, right?
Precisely. That's often the biggest hurdle people face right at the start. You're generating text based on something you heard, not read. And the recipient, like you said, it's always some kind of official body, an organismo. Could be the ayuntamiento, the city council, or maybe the editor of the local paper, or even related to work. You're writing to someone you don't know in a very official, very formal way.
Right. Let's make this concrete. The source material gives an example.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine you're writing to the director of the local newspaper. You're an art lover, and the topic is about museum ticket prices going up, which you're not happy about. In that scenario, what are the absolute must-have points the exam instructions demand you cover in your letter?
Okay, yeah, that museum ticket example is a good one. In that case, there are usually three specific non-negotiable things you have to include. And often, these points basically become the outline for the main part of your letter. First, you got to explicitly mention and use the information you got from listening to that audition twice.
Yeah.
You have to show you were listening and understood it. Second, you need to explain why this issue, the ticket price hike, in this case, why it affects you personally, what's your connection to it. And third, you must lay out the negative consequences that you believe this price increase will cause. What bad things do you think will happen because of it?
And if you miss one of those?
Well, if any one of those required points is missing, you're likely looking at a serious markdown, even if your Spanish is otherwise perfect. They're really strict about fulfilling the task requirements.
Okay, so that's what the content. But the how, the formality, and the constraints seem just as crucial. Let's talk about things like word count and tone.
Absolutely critical. The word count first. It's tight, usually 150 to 180 words.
That's not a lot. Maybe three medium paragraphs?
Exactly. And it's not just a guideline, it's pretty strict. This forces you to be really strategic. You have to choose carefully which points from the audio or which consequences you focus on. Going significantly over or under that word count, even by maybe 10 or 15 words, can lose you points. Ruthless prioritization is key.
So every word counts, literally. And the tone, we keep saying formal, but what does that mean in practice?
It means primarily using the formal Eusted form consistently throughout the entire letter. Because you're writing to an official, someone you don't know personally, every single verb conjugation, every pronoun, le, su, it all has to align with Eusted.
And if you slip up, if one little two creeps in by accident,
that's a clear sign you haven't mastered the formal register. They'll penalize that quite heavily. It can come across as disrespectful in that context, even if it's just a slip.
Wow. Okay, so getting that Eusted right is non-negotiable. It really sets the whole tone. Let's move on to the structure then, the actual architecture of the letter. You mentioned three blocks.
Yes, the definitive duprint. Pretty much any formal Spanish letter follows this. Block one is el encabezamiento, that's the header. Block two is el desarrollo, the main development or body. And block three is la despedida, the farewell or closing.
Okay, block one, the header. For a standard traditional paper letter format, what absolutely has to be in there?
For a paper letter, you need the sender's details, your name and address, and the recipient's details, their name, title, address, plus the place and date of writing. You then finish this top section with the formal opening salutation.
Right, the salutation. Now, this is where you mentioned punctuation gets tricky and very different from English. What's the rule for that opening greeting?
Yeah, forget English rules here completely. In Spanish formal protocol, you absolutely must put a colon after the salutation. Not a comma, not a period, a colon. So for example, estimado señor director, or muy señores míos. That colon signals here comes the body of the letter on the next line. Using anything else is a clear formatting error.
Okay, that colon detail is crucial. A small thing, but easy to get wrong if you're used to English. What if the B2 task is an email instead of a letter? Does the header change?
It does. It simplifies things a bit, which helps with the word count, actually, if it's an email format. The asunto, the subject line, becomes mandatory. You have to write a clear subject. But you usually leave out the full addresses for sender and recipient because the email system handles that. You still need that formal salutation, though, and definitely still use the colon right after it before starting your message.
Got it. Okay, moving down to block two, el desarrollo. This is the main chunk, right, where we use the audio notes and have to stick to that tight word count. How should someone structure this part?
Yeah, this is the core. It usually breaks down to three logical steps, often mirroring the order of the points in the exam instructions. Part one is the presentation. You basically introduce yourself briefly, state your connection to the topic, and clearly state why you're writing. And crucially, this is where you must refer back to the audio you heard. You need to make that link explicit. Something like, following the radio report I heard on Tuesday about museum prices, or regarding the announcement made concerning, you set the context.
Okay, sets the stage. Then part two.
Part two is the exposition. This is where you develop the main issue. You explain the problem in more detail, you elaborate on those negative consequences you mentioned earlier, and you explain how it affects you personally. Remember that word count, though. Be concise. Stick to the points required by the instructions. Don't wander off topic.
Right. Focus is key. And the final part of this main block.
Part three is the solution or the claim. You need to end the development section with a clear call to action or a specific point. Propose a concrete solution, if appropriate, or clearly state what you are requesting, demanding, or suggesting the recipient should do. Leave them in no doubt about what you want the outcome to be.
Excellent. That makes sense. Intro, problem packed. Solution request. Now, the final block, block three, the despedida, the farewell. We need to maintain that formality right to the very end. What goes in here?
Yes, the formal tone must hold. This block usually has about three or four components. You often start with a brief acknowledgement or expression of gratitude, thanking them for their time or attention, for instance. Then, depending on the letter type, you might add a reference to a follow-up, something like, I look forward to receiving the requested documentation, or I await your response. A set phrase indicating you expect something next.
And then the actual closing phrase itself.
Exactly. A formal farewell phrase. Common ones are atentamente, or le saluda atentamente, or cordialmente. And again, watch the punctuation. This is another tricky spot. Often, in Spanish formal letters, you put a comma after this closing phrase, not a period, like in English. So a very standard and safe way is write your chosen farewell phrase, like atentamente, put a comma, then go to the next line for your signature or typed name.
A comma, okay. Another specific detail to lock down. And then your name goes underneath. Do you need to add your job title, El Cargo?
Your name, yes. Now, El Cargo, your position or title, you only include that if your job is directly relevant to why you're writing, based on the role the exam instructions told you to adopt. For instance, if the instructions say you are the president of the local historical society, then yes, you'd sign with your name and then Presidente de la Sociedad Histórica Local. But if you're writing just as a concerned citizen or an art enthusiast, like in the museum example, then no title is needed. Just your name is fine. Adding an irrelevant title would be strange.
Okay, that clarifies the title part. So we have this consistent three-block structure. But you mentioned the formulas might change slightly depending on why you're writing, like a complaint versus a request.
That's right. That leads us nicely into the next point. While the three-block structure is pretty much fixed, the specific set phrases, the formulas you use, especially in block two, starting the argument, and block three, the closing, need to adapt to the letter's purpose. Our sources generally group these formal letters into three main types based on purpose. There are cartas de reclamación, which are letters of complaint or claim, then cartas de solicitud, which are letters of request, and sometimes cartas de recomendación, letters of recommendation, though complaints and requests are probably more common in the exam.
Okay, so knowing whether I'm complaining or requesting isn't just about the topic. It actually changes the specific formal phrases I should probably use.
Exactly. It helps you choose the right tone and the conventional wording. Each type has slightly different standard phrases that signal its purpose clearly and formally. For example, if you're writing a reclamation, a complaint, you need language that is firm but still very respectful. You might start your main point with a phrase like, me dirijo a usted para expresar mi profundo descontento con. I am writing to you to express my deep dissatisfaction with. It's direct, but formal.
Right. Sets a clear complaint tone. And if it's a solicitude, a request, presumably the closing would be different. You wouldn't just end abruptly.
Absolutely. The closing for a request needs to convey hope and anticipation for a positive response. You wouldn't just sign off atentamente, maybe. A really useful formula to learn for a request letter closing is something like, a la espera de sus noticias, or even better, confiando en recibir una respuesta favorable, le saluda atentamente. Trusting to receive a favorable reply, I greet you attentively. You see how that one phrase neatly bundles the formal usted, the respectful tone, and the specific purpose of awaiting a positive outcome.
Yeah, that's incredibly useful. It shows that having a few of these key formulas memorized for different situations could save you a lot of time and potential awkwardness trying to invent them on the spot.
Definitely. It's about efficiency and accuracy. That structural rigor, the need for specific address details, the careful closing it all, stems from a history of Spanish administrative and legal communication needing absolute clarity. The format ensures the interaction is properly recorded and unambiguous.
Okay, perfect. Let's try and wrap this up for everyone listening. So to really conquer this DELE B2 formal letter task, Tarea Uno, you've got to be ready for a few distinct challenges layered together. First, it's driven by audio. You must listen carefully and integrate those notes. Second, it demands total consistency with the formal yes did treatment. No slipping into two. And third, you have to stick rigidly to that three-block structure, paying super close attention to those tactical details like the 150 to 180 word limit and those tricky non-English punctuation rules, especially that colon after the greeting and maybe a comma after the closing phrase.
That really captures the whole picture, yeah. And maybe just connecting it back to the bigger idea, mastering this level of formality. It isn't just about jumping through an exam hoop. It really demonstrates that you can operate effectively within formal Spanish contexts, within institutions. Those differences we talked about, the structure, the usted, the punctuation they highlight, that real communicative competence means knowing how to shift your whole style based on the cultural context. So maybe the final thought to leave you with is this. Think about other areas, maybe in your professional life or academic work. Where else is knowing the exact format, the expected layout, the right tone, the specific way to address someone just as critical, maybe even more critical sometimes, than just the raw information you want to get across? The DELB2 forces you to confront that reality and learn how to adapt. It's a valuable skill beyond the exam itself.